Wake up, I've got something to tell you.
What's wrong?
There are demons among us.
Go, lucky man.
Welcome to the Dead Harvey Podcast. This is the podcast for both indie horror filmmakers and fans. This is where we're going to talk about the horror stories behind the horror stories. But really, the goal here is to help indie horror filmmakers by talking about these stories that are behind the stories, because we want to see more indie horror out there and we want to see more people watching it. So all these little stories are things that we think indie horror filmmakers can take tricks and learn things and give them things to think about, because the more stuff that's out there is better for us. So if that sounds good to you, please go to deadharvey.com, join our e-newsletter, follow us on social, subscribe to the podcast, whatever. We're building a community, so we need everybody on board on the same page and to get more things happening out there. So today is our top 10 films to look out for in April, and it's a big one. There's lots of stuff out there, so it's really tough to actually this month to get it down to 10. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about what's on our radar. Brad, what's on your radar?
I was digging through Shudder as usual, and I saw this movie on there that I'd never heard of before. It was called Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker. Now this movie,
it's a very good name.
It is a great name. Butcher Baker. It's an 80s movie. I'd never heard of it before, but it's got basically Bo Svenson, who was in the original Walking Tall movie before, you know, The Rock did his remake for it. Well, first of all, the movie is about this this kid whose parents die in this car accident, and he has an aunt that takes over for him and takes care of him, and she smothers him beyond like what an aunt or even mother should smother somebody for, and just has all this attention on it, controls his life, doesn't want him to go anywhere, have other relationships, and then things spiral downward. But there's a bully in the movie played by the great Bill Paxton when he was probably about like 17 or 18. And then
So this is an older movie then. This is an older
movie. Yeah, it's an 80s movie. It's definitely worth watching. It is weird and just totally offbeat. If you're into that obscure stuff, definitely check that one out. But it actually just made me nostalgic for a movie that Bill Paxton directed before he passed away called Frailty.
Fantastic.
Which is a total classic.
Fantastic.
And so I went and I rewatched this one last night. And, you know, we were, unfortunately, when Bill Paxton passed away, he had some projects that he was going to do. One of the ones that I had read about was he was going to direct the Joe Lansdale adaptation of The Bottoms, which is a fantastic book. And he would have had all kinds of other great stuff. I think he passed away when he was only like 60 or 61 of heart complications.
At most.
And then the family ended up, I think there was like a lawsuit where the family was suing the surgeons. There was something weird that happened with that and the way that he died. Yeah, but we definitely lost a great one with Bill Paxton. Not only was he amazing in Weird Science and Aliens and everything else, but he was a fantastic director. And he would have done a lot more cool stuff. But Frailty is basically the story of this man who has this vision from God, who believes that that God is telling him to kill demons. Now, throughout the entire movie, you don't know whether he's crazy or whether God is actually telling him to do this. So it's very Old Testament style. And he has to do this like with the kids around. He's trying to get the kids to help him out as well, too. But what I really love about the movie is that it's so ambiguous. And it stays that way until the very end as well.
Yeah, Frailty was awesome. I kind of forgot about Frailty. Yeah, well, Bill Paxton, I have a soft spot for Bill Paxton, for sure. Like you said, from Weird Science to Aliens, even I rewatched True Lies recently.
Yeah.
And I forgot that, you know, James Cameron. Yeah, because James Cameron and Arnold Schwarzenegger were buddies with him and clearly got him on just to play the cheesy car salesman guy who was in the role. But, like, Bill Paxton nailed that constantly. And Frailty was awesome because it showed another side of him, too.
Yeah.
Because you're used to him playing that over-the-top stuff. But Frailty was... I love Frailty.
Oh, and Powers Booth is in it too. And it has this great, like the way that it shot is very noir-like. I mean, it's just a sweet movie.
What's actually funny is Frailty ties into the one that's on my radar that I watched this last week. But first, I want to mention that while I was bored one night near the end of the night, I played Spin the Wheel of Tubi.
Yes.
Which is that I went on to Tubi and I was like, I'm just going to get my phone to generate two random numbers. Mm-hmm. And I did that. And I was like, okay, so I got 74 and I scrolled down 7 and over 4 and I landed on the micro budget horror Clown Face.
Yes.
So I was like, you know what? Every once in a while, I'm going to play Spin the Wheel of Tubi and just find something. It helps somebody out. So Clown Face is from this guy, Alex Bourne. Mm-hmm. He's actually done a bunch of micro budget stuff. It's all super low budget. I mean, it's ranked pretty low on like whatever on IMDb and stuff. But you know what? I watched a bit of it. Looked pretty good. But I think every once in a while, I'll just give a shout out. Shout out to Alex Bourne and Clownface because it won my Wheel of Tubi. And I'll do that every once in a while. But the one that's on my radar is, and it kind of ties in with Frailty, is because I finally watched Midsommar.
Yeah. I was waiting for when you were going to see that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one that, like, I know that I love the cult stuff, cult mm-hmm. subgenre, and the religious overtones, which ties in with Frailty there because mm-hmm. Midsommar's not, I read one afterwards that they originally had conceived it almost as a slasher film, that these basically a bunch of teenagers get lured over to Sweden and it's basically a slasher film. It was this cult basically slaughters everybody, but I can't remember the director's name, but he came on board. He saw it more of a drama and wanted to, like, add in these other elements and make it a little more ambiguous, sort of like Frailty did, as to what was going on. And it was, first off, the gore that's in it is fantastic.
There's some
great scenes in there.
Oh yeah.
And two, it reminded me how much Wicker Man, like the cult stuff. Like, it reminded me
definitely
a lot of
Wicker Man. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole idea of, for me, I just watching it was like the idea of a group of people truly believing in something that is just wrong.
Yeah.
And that you get sucked into is just a scary concept. And that's like what Midsommar is all about, really, right? Like the idea is you get sucked into this, like, these are crazy people. Like the looks on their faces when the two old people kill themselves.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like violently. And then but these people are like, no, this is like, and you don't know, like, are these guys crazy? Do they really believe this stuff? And it was, it'll make you think, and there's some weird shit in it too.
Well, have you seen, I don't know how to pronounce his name, either, but the director's name is Ari Aster. He did this movie called Hereditary also.
Oh, and yes.
If you've seen Hereditary, it has the same sort of the way that it's set up and the way that it gets under your skin. There is a thing that he has where I've heard him talk about his movies before, where he says that there's definitely, like, he taps into mental illness. Because mm-hmm. you see a lot of the characters are dealing with mental health issues, especially, but then they throw, like, a supernatural element in there as well too. And then when you take on Hereditary is definitely worth watching for anybody that hasn't.
Hereditary is great.
Talking about movies that will really, like, get under your skin and stay in your head, his movies especially are like that. Both Hereditary and Midsommar are like that. And I actually, now with these movies, especially Midsommar, I think more people liked Hereditary, but Midsommar seemed to split people a little bit. Some people, it seemed like people either love it or they hate it. I really liked it. I could see why people don't get into it as much because with his style, it's a little aggressive in how he kind of sucks you in, and there's this air of doom and gloom and it just keeps kind of building. It is basically like this unsettling quality that he has.
And there is, it is, it's very unsettling. There's so many scenes of, and he puts you right on your toes. Mm-hmm. Like, if you remember when they first get to the camp, they haven't even got to the camp yet.
Yeah.
And they all have a bunch of mushrooms and all start tripping.
Yeah.
But they actually, like, the background, they go with it. And the whole thing is unsettling. Like, as she runs into the woods and you can see all the trees are very subtly kind of moving mm-hmm. in weird ways. And he creates a very unsettling environment, and you get this idea going into it that your brain's going to get messed with. Like, it's just going to be, you know, this is like, and it's very like mm-hmm. some of the scenes are very unsettling.
I would not want to watch this on an acid trip at all.
No,
you would have a bad trip on this. It'd be a good way to test on how generally upbeat you are is if you have a good trip taking acid and watching any one of these movies.
Yeah, well, it's actually kind of funny, like. It also, because I don't know, I mean, I don't know what the budget is. It actually got a major theatrical release.
Right? Yeah.
And did all right. But there's a lot of scenes that are just, they look really good, but they're unsettling at the same time. It's all, I don't know if it's drone or they're taking it from the top, but they're like hovering over like those diamond scenes.
Yeah, there was a lot of those shots early. Yeah.
Right. And it's just when they're all dressed the same, they're all in white around these, you know, in perfect alignment with stuff. It's very, like, the way they shot it was pretty cool. Like, and I don't know how much budget they had, but just, I don't know. It's a cool movie to look at and be creeped out by. It also reminded me of that, like, cult movies. And there's not a lot of them, but like Wicker Man was awesome. Mm-hmm. Obviously, boy, really torn on the Wicker Man. Like, obviously the original is way better, but Nicolas Cage is in the remake. So
yeah.
And it has the classic, the bees, the bees, the bees.
Yeah, that was Neil LaBute that did that one. That was bizarre for him.
Yeah. Anyhow, finally got around to it. It's been something I wanted to watch for a long time. And
Yeah, I actually really dug it. I admire like whenever a filmmaker can make me feel disturbed and make me feel disturbed for months and years after I've seen the movie. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty impressive. Even if I have a hard time watching the movie, even if it's disturbing while I'm watching, I'm having a hard time getting through it, or if I'm not in the mood for it. Any filmmaker that can have that effect on you, because I think like what really works with movies is if you have a personal connection to it, or if you have an emotion that comes from it. And the talent that he has for disturbing people is definitely something that not a lot of people can do.
Yeah, it's cool to watch just for that, for the unsettling, because it's a cool thing that you can, if you can learn how to make things look unsettling, there's so much use for that you can do. Like, I'm trying to think of stuff that made me like, that stuck with me. And a lot of it's just over the top. Like a Serbian film is over the top.
Yeah.
Like that's just, don't ever watch a Serbian film if you don't want to be disturbed. Like, but it's not because it's unsettling. It's just disturbing.
And I think I just saw on Facebook recently where somebody was advertising, somebody just made a documentary about the making of a Serbian film.
Oh, it's one that's so disturbing and I'm never going to forget that. I don't even know if I recommend it or not. Like another one that always stuck with me is like Martyrs, the original Martyrs. Again, but that was a cross between the two, because that's got a little bit, there's unsettling scenes and themes and ideas in that that kind of like stick with you, but it's also over the top when it comes to some gore. But like Martyrs is one I'll tell people to watch. I'll be like, okay,
Martyrs is a great movie.
But it's great. But you know, but this one's a different level if you say, but it's true. Like I think afterwards, you know, it's one of those ones that you stop, you think for a second, you're like, huh, it's a little. It's a little off.
Yeah, kind of like the way that he and like I think this goes into like what you were saying earlier with the way that he shoots it to make it unsettling. When the plane first lands, when the plane is basically going to what they believe is a vacation spot, the camera is turning itself sort of upside down. So it's already kind of spinning out of control before you even get into this place where the danger is. So right when they have like the veneer of like this beautiful location, it's already spinning out of control. And it does these little tricks like that to keep building the disturbing nature of the movie and the tension of the movie. Like, and there's this scene in Hereditary that just sticks out in my mind where she's being possessed, or she's just floating up in the air and she's just stabbing herself relentlessly while she's floating in the air. That was really freaky and unsettling to me. But there's several scenes that are in this movie that are like that. And all the characters are sort of mentally unbalanced and nobody really like has a grasp on like what's going on or is in control of everything. And that also adds to what makes this movie disturbing and stick out in your mind as well too.
Yeah, for sure. It's something to watch if you want to look. And now you mentioned that, I remember that, like as they're driving, they're driving up to the camp or whatever you call it. And the camera completely flips upside down and stays that way for a while. And it's little things like that. I would definitely, if you want to learn unsettling shots, like I remember in film school they used to always talk about, it's like if you look at horror movies, there's always something off a little bit in like in the way, like you want to look at angles and make them so they don't really connect, because it creates this sense of unease, right, where you'll, you know, just put it off a little bit so it's like the door is a little crooked and like make movements a little that don't really connect, because it creates that sense of unease. And he nails it with so much stuff in here.
Absolutely.
So definitely worth watching if you want to learn all that. Anyway, that was a long deep dive into what's on our radar, because what we really got to get to is April's films of the month. This one was a little tough to actually. I had to cut a few ones that I wanted to keep in the top 10 list because there's so much cool shit out this.
March was like month. That too. Yeah.
And this one, of course, the thing to mention is Shudder's doing their halfway to Halloween month. So they're piling on a bunch of really cool old content. There's a lot of stuff coming to Shudder. So we don't really want to talk about old content that much. I mean, we'll talk about new stuff and maybe, you know, the old stuff that they did, but there's a lot of cool old stuff coming on there that was tough not to talk about, but definitely check out Shudder this month.
Oh, Shudder has been just crushing it lately, especially this last year. They've just been adding tons of shit. Whoever is in, and we have, Shudder doesn't even know who we are. So we are just doing this as basically like movies that we appreciate, but for horror movie fans, Shudder is a must. Even if you're just kind of casual, it's definitely worth checking out because there's so much content they add on there. But if you're a diehard horror fan, it's a must have.
Yeah, and neither of us are going to talk about it, I don't think. But Creepshow 2 starts again on Shudder this month, and I mean that alone. I mean,
Creepshow season two, yeah.
Creepshow season two starts. I mean, everyone, if you're listening to this, you should probably know the history of Creepshow. Stephen King and George Romero launched it in the 80s.
And now Nicotero's heading it up.
Now Nicotero's heading it up. But the really cool thing is in this season, segment directors David Bruckner, Roxanne Benjamin, Rob Schrab, John Harrison, Greg Nicotero, and Tom Savini are all directing segments for this. And the cool thing is all those last three, Tom Savini, Nicotero, and John Harris, were all worked on the original Creepshow. So they're bringing them back to do that. So this is, I mean, they're really cool. So Creepshow alone and the fact that they rebooted it and they're bringing it out, that's worth Shudder alone in my mind. For the full top 10 list and an in-depth look at the 10 things that are on our radar, we put it out on social. It's going to be on our website and we're going to send it out in our e-newsletter. So that's what you got to do to get the full top 10 list. You can find it that way. But now we're going to talk about one each just to kind of tease out a couple of things about what's on our radar. So within this top 10. Well, what are you going to talk about? You were going to talk about Willy's Wonderland, right?
Yeah, it was it was tough for me because there's so many movies, but since Willy's Wonderland is about Nick Cage and puppets, yeah, it only took me about half a second before I decided to talk about that.
Well, there's only really like five boxes that need to be ticked with a good horror movie, and Nicolas Cage and puppets are two of them.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't even have to do much else, and it's already like going to be something that we're going to take a close look at. Yeah, that's for sure. So you're doing Willy's Wonderland. It was really tough for me too because there's a lot of cool guys doing cool stuff, but I have to go with In the Earth by Ben Wheatley.
Good choice.
Just because Ben Wheatley, I think some of his stuff when he came on the scene, I was like, this is cool shit. And I love how this one came out, what the story is behind it. So In the Earth by Ben Wheatley is going to be mine, and yours is going to be Willy's Wonderland. So let's start with Willy's Wonderland. Tell us what it's about.
Now, I cheated on this one a little bit because it did come out for sale last month, but it's out for rental this month. So in about a week.
That counts.
Yes. So in about a week, I'll be able to rent this movie and watch Nick Cage in his full glory fighting puppets. So this movie is basically kind of like, it's been described as Five Nights at Freddy's, as basically Nick Cage fighting the characters from Five Nights at Freddy's, or also if you've ever been to Chuck E. Cheese or Showbiz Pizza, it's kind of based on those as well too. It's spirits that go very child's play-like kind of plot for it. The souls of these killers get into these animatronic puppets and take over this location. Nick Cage is the janitor, has to clean the place at night. And then of course, all these puppets start coming after him. He has to take them down and save the Chuck E. Cheese like restaurant, or Five Freddy's like restaurant, whatever it is. But it's, you know, it's Nick Cage going crazy alone at night by himself and then getting attacked by puppets and saving this place. So, I mean, you can't go wrong. Now, I saw the review on this and one of the people said that Nick Cage didn't have any lines. And I hope that does not happen because we need Nick Cage to go mad, crazy in all of his coked out glory and start screaming and have like weird, like impromptu lines as he's fighting these puppets, you know. You can't have a Silent Bob version of Nicolas Cage.
No, it's just not what anyone signed up for. not what anyone signed up for. What I liked about this, and looking back on how it came to be, is really cool. There's definitely, like, it opened up in ideas for us, so hopefully it opens up to ideas for you. So this is actually from a screenwriter and producer by the guy by the name of G.O. Parsons. I don't know him at all. This is the first I've heard his name. But he... basically, I have no idea of his age or anything like that. So I'm assuming he's fairly young, but he's acted in a bunch of stuff, did a bunch of work just kind of around, and someone had told him that he needs to get a film or go make a film, produce a film to get his career going. So he made a 1-minute short film called Wally's Wonderland, and apparently he didn't even really like it that much, but he kind of liked the concept of what he came up with. So he wrote a feature-length script based on that short, and then he put that on the Bloodlist. Huh. Now, the Bloodlist is essentially like the Blacklist, but just for horror films. I knew it existed.
I never heard of this before.
Yeah, and I had heard about it before, kind of forgot about it. But when I read about this, I'm like, oh, man, I got to look more into this Bloodlist because that's pretty cool. And so apparently on the Bloodlist, it got super popular, and it got super popular on the Bloodlist, which got the eye of Nick Cage. So Nick Cage found it because it was popular on the Bloodlist. He reaches out and says, hey, this is awesome. He agrees to produce it along with a whole bunch of other guys. Next thing you know, we get this movie and it already has a cult following and it just came out because of that story. So lots of cool backstory on how this came about. And the blood list is definitely something I'm going to do some more research on, and probably we should talk about in a future episode.
That's fantastic. See, Nick Cage, in all ways, like constantly surprising and impressing us by even knowing what the blood list is. He's way ahead of the game.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much about that that's pretty cool. And it goes to show that, like, when you know enough stuff out there and you're doing enough things, like, something can just happen. Like, you can catch lightning in a bottle. Like, and this is just, this is also why it's like, when you look at a lot of micro-budget film and a lot of ideas out there, and we talk about this a lot, it's like, fucking make a bonkers idea. Like yeah. Make it really original. Like, if you're just talking, I was like, well, that's a slasher film in a cabin in the woods or whatever. I mean, you're not, like, that's great. It might be a great film. Might make a great thing if you're producing yourself, but if you want to catch the eyes of others, a Nick Cage type character, you know, fighting Chucky, demonic Chuck E. Cheese dolls, like, all of a sudden it's like, it's a cool idea. Then it catches the eyes. It can move the needle. And I think that's, I know it's, you hear so many stories about this where it's like, whether it's the blood list or on YouTube or somewhere else, it's just a cool way to get seen and made and get things happening.
I wonder if the original script title had any sort, or was any sort of like a nod to Wally World in the Vacation movies.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Like, he changed it from Wally's Wonderland to
like Willy's from a theme Wonderland. Park to like a Chuck E. Cheese or Five Nights at Freddy's thing. You know, I wonder if
that's, yeah, like that. I'm wondering if it is a nod to the Vacation, right?
Yeah.
And then someone said, hey, let's just change it to Willy so we don't get in trouble, because it is funny that it was Wally's and
went, yeah. Or like, or you could just imagine like characters from like the theme park going crazy, or if they're like, they're on a roller coaster, if like the machine's turning into like Maximum Overdrive or something taking control.
But man, yeah, Willy's Wonderland ticks a lot of boxes. Cool story about how it got made. So definitely pretty cool. My film is in the Earth. And to be honest, I don't know much about In the Earth, but I love Ben Wheatley. So yeah. Ben Wheatley. The backstory on him, these are the things that interest me that I think a lot of people take away from, is how these guys got seen and got their careers going. So Ben Wheatley, I think he did a bunch of animations and a bunch of like stuff on his own. And he created a little YouTube page called, like, I think it was Mr. and Mrs. Wheatley or something like that. Like, it was his own little thing. So he started posting little short films and animations, and he got like over 100 of them on there. And then he started getting noticed by large media companies. And once he got noticed by large media companies, it opened a bunch of doors, and he expanded into sort of, you know, more mainstream stuff. It opened some doors and he got things made. His second film was Kill List. And Kill List is the one that is the first Ben Wheatley film that I saw. And I can't remember what his first one is, but he went from Kill List to another awesome one called Sightseers. And then shortly after that, one called A Field in England. And A Field in England was, I love Field in England. I don't think it was very a big mass hit. But Kill List.
The first movie was Down Terrace.
Down Terrace. I have not seen it. I don't even know if it's a horror film.
Let's see, a crime drama. Yeah. Crime family looks to unmask the police informant in their midst who threatens to take down their business.
Yeah, I have not seen Down Terrace. I know that was his first. But his second was Kill List. And I think Kill List is basically the one that put him on the radar. Like,
Kill List is a must see. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. If you haven't seen Kill List, it starts kind of like a crime drama, really. These two hitmen are kind of intertwined in something, but it just, the road it goes down by the end of it is just a gory.
Gory, it's fantastic. And a lot of tension too. Just really well executed, no pun intended. But you recommended that one to me a while back, and I was an instant Ben Wheatley fan after I saw it.
Yeah. Those three, I would say. A Field in England is a little out there, but there's some disturbing scenes in A Field in England. But those three were the ones for me: Kill List, Sightseers, and A Field in England. Now, after those three, Ben Wheatley went on to do some bigger stuff. I think he was attached originally to The Meg.
He's actually doing, he's on here as announced as the director for Meg 2, The Trench. That one's announced. So I don't know if they're filming that one yet. But he also did Rebecca, the remake of the Hitchcock movie that was on Netflix. Yeah. Yeah. Free Fire with Brie Larson, and then High Rise with Tom Hiddleston.
Right. And so I think he went down this sort of mainstream road a little bit. I think Rebecca didn't land the way that he thought it was going to land. It got some negative pushback.
It didn't feel like him either. It was just dull.
Yeah. Well, I think that happens to a lot of guys, and we've talked about that before. Yeah. When you know you create this kind of look and feel that's unique to you, and then as you get bigger, you know, people are going to pull you into more mainstream stuff and make you more vanilla, kind of marginalize you a little bit. So anyhow, I believe he was attached to something. It might have been Meg 2, it might have been something else. But then when COVID shut everything down, he decided, fuck it, I'm going to go write and direct my own low-budget horror movie, get back to my roots. I'm going to do it during the pandemic. And that is In the Earth. He did this in 15 days, wrote it and directed it in 15 days on a low budget. I believe it's IFC Night, or what's it called? IFC's After Dark is releasing it. So it's not even, it's not getting like a Universal or Paramount or any of the big boys or anything like that. It's IFC, Midnight Releasing, I believe is who it is. And so, yeah, I think it comes out April 30th. So you have plenty of time here to get caught up on Ben Wheatley, but I would recommend anybody, Kill List, Sightseers, A Night in England or Field in England, get ready for In the Earth, which is coming out at the end of the month.
That's, yeah. Kill List is like just straight up brutal and really effective crime movie. And then the other one, and then Sightseers is more of like a black comedy, but it still has a pretty, it definitely has a bite to it throughout the entire movie.
Yeah, it's got its dark turns and a bite to it within it. But between those, if you watch Kill List and then Sightseers, if you watch those back to back, you get this feeling for who Ben Wheatley is, because he's got this dark sense of humor. I mean, don't get me wrong, Kill List has some funny shit in it too. Right? Mm-hmm. It's like, the whole idea is that it's been so long since I saw Kill List. Like the guy is with his wife, and the old assassin buddy of his comes in. They're like talking about it like they're two old, like just worker friends.
Yeah,
and just there's these sort of funny scenes within it, but it definitely gets violent and dark.
Yeah, Kill List is more like sort of comic relief, just to ease the tension a little bit, whereas Sightseers is just a full-on black comedy throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, but I think you get a good idea of who Ben Wheatley is in that. But anyhow, after watching those, I remember being so taken by Kill List, being like, fuck, this is awesome, that the next thing that I found of his was Sightseers, and quickly saw that. So I was kind of following him as he was making stuff. So I'm pretty stoked that this is kind of like a return to what he's done. I have no idea. I mean, it takes place during the pandemic, and so it'll be interesting to see what he comes up with, but that's the one I'm stoked for sure.
Nature is a force of evil is the tagline for that one.
Nah, it's great.
Oh, and it's about a virus, a scientist and a scout venturing deep into the forest for a routine equipment run. And then they're leaving out, and then get slaughtered by the earth or nature.
Or something.
Yeah, like Mother Nature. When she gets pissed, she gets pissed.
Actually, what's funny is I think we're going to see a lot of these.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a lot out of the pandemic where nature is pissed type of themes. Mm-hmm. I actually was talking to another buddy who's a producer, and he's seen a few scripts that are just basically that. Like, it's basically wilderness, nature, the earth fighting back and saying, fuck you, you assholes. And I think, you know, out of the pandemic, we're going to see a bunch of that. That stuff come up. It's actually probably pretty good. Probably catch a lot. If you're writing something, it's probably a good theme to come up with the earth is pissed. It's going to fight back. So yeah, that's it. That's the two. Did you have anything else you wanted to chat about?
Well, I just wanted to warn people to stay away from Chuck E. Cheese and any other places that have animatronic robots in them, because they're possessed. And when you're not looking, they'll just take over your body, or they'll kill you if you go to the bathroom or order the wrong kind of pizza. Stay away from those evil animatronic puppets.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's also kind of funny. Mannequins have always kind of scared me. It's it's a weird thing. Like I can't remember. It's always been like, I get a sense of like dread or unease when I'm going through a mall filled with mannequins. I don't like them looking at me. Like, it's a weird, I don't like mannequins. So
remember
like,
that Twilight Zone episode where they all came? Do you remember that one where like the girl works in the department store and then all the mannequins come alive, and they can come alive for only one night? And so at the end of the night, she finds out that they basically all turn back to mannequins, but there's that one night out of the year that they all become alive.
Yeah. It's kind of that's the horror version of mannequin. And Mannequin 2.
Mannequin 2 is turning into Kim Cattrall, so everything worked out.
I should give a notable release. We're not going to talk about it in the top 10, but I do want to give a nod to a movie coming out April 13th called Virus Shark. Nice. Yes, there's a new virus called Shvid 1, and it's spread by a shark bite. So a group of scientists go to the bottom of the ocean to find a cure, but they get attacked by virus shark. And it's actually kind of funny because I didn't realize it while I was bored going through my wheel of Tubi. There are so many shark movies, like Sharktopus, Virus Shark, Shark. It's like, out of all things to make low budget, like shark movies, like they're notoriously hard to make. Yeah. I don't know why. I guess it's the low budget CG that people can do now.
I guess. Yeah.
Like there's so, like, I was like, there are endless shark movies. Like,
you know what that reminded me of when you mentioned that is there was a movie that I saw that's on Amazon. I have not watched it yet, but it's called Post-Apocalyptic Commando Shark.
Yes.
And I think it's just like a guy like with a prosthetic shark head running around attacking people.
Well, I think it's two. There's two companies that are at fault for this. One is Roger Corman's. Roger Corman does a pilot. He does all the Sharktopus ones, like Sharktopus versus whatever, like, or Shark, Sharkalanch or Sharker.
Shark, Santa Jaws too. That came
out. Yeah. So he did all those ones. But then another group, the Asylum, they made a bunch of mockbusters around the sharks. So between the Asylum and Corman, they just we got flooded with shark movies, and I don't know if anyone actually watches them, but they usually it just means low budget CG and sharks eating people. But it is kind of cool. Ever since which one was it? Dark Blue, when Samuel L. Jackson gets eaten by the shark.
Dark Blue Sea?
Dark Blue, Deep Blue Sea, whatever it is?
Deep Blue Sea, I think it was.
Deep Blue Sea. Where ever since then, I think everyone's like, okay, a dude getting eaten by a shark is just kind of cool. It's the one where he's like standing.
He's got the big monologue, right?
He's got the huge monologue.
Cuts him in half, right?
Yeah. He's got the huge monologue and he's given this big speech and it just ends with the shark jumping out and eating him completely. So I think ever since then, people are like, there's always room for people to get eaten by sharks. So anyhow, that's my notable one. Virus Shark.
In the Suicide Squad movie coming out, the new one, the James Gunn one, Sylvester Stallone plays King Shark, which is basically like...
That's awesome. Yeah, the trailer's awesome.
Yeah, which is basically like a human shark running around eating people. Yeah.
Look for the R-rated trailer on that because you can see the shark... What's the shark man? King Shark rips a dude in half in the R-rated trailer. It's pretty awesome. I also should note that the maker of Virus Shark also made a film called Land Shark, which was about sharks that go through sand.
Yeah.
He also did Bigfoot versus Zombies. He's done some notable other stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyhow, that's all I got for this week. And if you guys have made it this far, congratulations. You're probably a like-minded individual and our goals are aligned. And like we said here, what we really want to do is help horror filmmakers. And we think talking about these stories behind the stories and promoting different indie horror is a good thing. And so if we want to see more of it and we want more people watching it. So if that sounds like you, please go to deadharvey.com, subscribe to our e-newsletter, follow us on social media, follow the podcast, subscribe and help us try to get more indie horror out there. And try to get more people watching it.
Okay. And I just realized that we forgot to talk about any kind of killer bunny movies, and it's Easter. But until next time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's an untapped Easter horror is untapped, but it does exist.
Yeah.
We'll have to do special mentions next week on Easter horror just to make up for it. All right. Until next week.
All right. See you next week.
Only demons should fear me. You're not a demon, are you?